The Mike Missinelli Show.
Turn your radios up. Mike's ready to rock you.
Good afternoon, everybody. How's everybody doing? You're calmer today than yesterday. I am. I'm calmer. And I'm gonna startle you because I've had time to process this now. We are a day away from the game that could decide the fate of this organization. Yesterday, we were all in panic mode. The one thing I said, and I still am leery of a Game 7. But suddenly, I'm not as leery for a Game 6. I don't know what has changed in my brain, but I think the Sixers are going to come up with a great effort in Game 6 and win the game in Toronto. Now, what is my frame of reference? Well, how about last year? You remember when the Sixers were down and out? They lost Game 5. The city was devastated. The people who watched that game, the people who were in that building, devastation to the nth degree. We didn't expect them to win Game 6. And there was an effort that came out of nowhere. Maxey went off. They won the game, and they took it to Game 7. Now, I don't want to recreate Game 7, but the Game 6 effort that was unexpected came. And I'm thinking the same thing could happen in Toronto. I think Toronto, believe it or not, now has gotten a little overconfident. They think they have knocked the Sixers' legs out from under them, and they're going to win the next two games. And I think that they're going to have a rude awakening. Because I don't think things are going to flow as smoothly for them at home. There's a lot of pressure when you're at home in front of a hometown crowd. Yeah, they help you, but there's also expectations. Because that crowd thinks now that their team has it knocked. And they're going to pull off something that nobody has ever been able to pull off. They're going to win four straight and win the series. I actually like the dynamic of the Sixers winning Game 6. Now, do I have any reason to think that somebody's going to come out and perform like crazy? I don't, but I just have this feeling. NBA players and NBA teams somehow can surprise you when you least expect it. And so whoever it's going to be, it could be Jimmy Harden. Jimmy H may go off. It could be Maxey again. It could be Embiid going for 40, 45 points. Something special is going to happen in Toronto. I'm feeling it. Because I don't feel that the Sixers are panicking. I'm not getting that impression that they're in panic mode. I actually think they're welcoming the challenge. They're still ahead at the end of the day, 3-2. I don't know. Am I talking out of my ear here, Tyrone and Jen?
No.
You're absolutely not. Couple of reasons. You brought up the key one. The Sixers are saying all the right things. And people say, oh, well, they're just talking. No, because last year it was different. They got tight. And they didn't have any answers. And you had the Australian in the locker room poisoning everybody's morale. Mm-hmm. Because they looked at him and they knew this guy. And he was pumping. I don't know what his heart was pumping.
But Kool-Aid.
Yeah, some people say Kool-Aid. I believe that that's an insult to Kool-Aid. It was likely much more bootleg Flavor-Aid. That was
that Flavor-Aid. Dollar store.
That dollar store
Flavor-Aid. Brand.
That's what he was pumping. But. Embiid after the game, we're fine. I think the Sixers recognize that finally, it took two games. Now, why it took two games, I don't know why. I don't care right now. They're losing a lot because of stuff they're not doing, not just because of things the Raptors are doing right. While the Raptors think they just got it licked. I do. I think they're a little bit overconfident, and they think they have it figured out. Mm-hmm. But the Sixers seem to recognize that in Game 4 and Game 5, after Game 4, they didn't recognize it. They thought it was the refs, blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. After 5, they're recognizing we didn't play well enough. We didn't bring enough. We didn't do enough. And I think they're going to bring that. And I also think that they're going to make shots. They made 27% of their threes in the last game. They made 50% in Game 1. If it's anything in between, I'm saying put it at 39-40. That's enough shot making to balance out. Because that Raptors offense, even as is, it's not potent. It's just not. It's not a potent offense. Their defense can be stifling and things like that. But that offense is not a potent offense. And Doc Rivers will probably recognize that when Paul Reed played well in the series, it wasn't because he played well. It was because Embiid was out and Reed was in with four starters. This is a simple thing. For some reason, the last two games he's decided that Paul Reed's a regular rotation player, and he had it beat it Harden out the game, and the game got away from him. That's a simple fix. Mm-hmm. You just stagger and beat it Harden. One of them stays on the court. Therefore, Paul Reed's with real starters, and now his energy's effective because you're not looking for him for anything. Little small things could be enough to win the game, win the series, and we come away annoyed but ready for Miami.
I have a feeling. I don't have a good feeling for Game 7. That's not going to change my outlook for Game 7, most likely, right?
I agree with you. If it gets to 7, it's a loss. Yeah. I'm saying it.
Yeah, this is so important for them to win the game. And see, here's the other thing. For what you think about the Sixers now, they are seasoned veteran professionals, most of them. And so in moments like these, the seasoned veteran professionals have more of a frame of reference than the young athletic team that's getting up and down the floor and playing with abandon. So I think they understand the moment. And because of that, I think they're going to play well in this game.
I agree.
And I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not a jolly chally. Believe me when I tell you, I was as disappointed as anybody, and I didn't know what to think. And I said, the only thing I said yesterday is they had to win Game 6 because Game 7 to me was poison. But the more I thought about it, the more I feel good about the fact that, you know, I used last year as a frame of reference. They were dead in the water in that series after they blew that 25, 27-point lead, whatever it was, at home. And they had to go on a road, and they had to summon some kind of an expert analysis and play like champs. And they did. That didn't carry over. But Game 6 was the moment. Save the series, win the series. Same kind of concept.
Yes. Now, VanVleet is doubtful for the game with the hip. And many rightfully think that's troublesome for the Sixers because of that jumbo lineup. Mm-hmm. But there's also now more film on that jumbo lineup. And Doc Rivers, I have to give him credit for this. The more time you give him between games, the better that he is. Mm-hmm. If the game was tonight, I would likely be more afraid of him.
Yeah.
They had a whole day for film yesterday. They got to practice it today. They then get the walkthrough tomorrow before the game, the shoot around in the morning. I think Doc's going to have them better prepared to defeat that jumbo lineup. Now, does that mean Maxey's still at a disadvantage? Absolutely. But he's a 21-year-old. You shouldn't have to rely on him. Tobias, he can hold his own with that lineup. Daniel Green, whatever we think about him, two extra days on old legs, that's a good thing on his old legs. He's not scared of anything. He's not a scared player. He'll fire. Embiid with the hand. And Jimmy Harden, as you brought it up.
Jimmy H,
I think, is going to respond better knowing what's coming from him with a couple days to prepare. And then if the Sixers make shots, that big lineup then struggles. Because, again, they're not very good offensively. And that's where they'll miss a guy, an extra guy who can go get you 30 points. Because Siakam can't do it alone. That's another thing. So while it is, I would have rather VanVleet, because then Maxey's going to eat. And then I know how they're going to win, because Maxey's going to get 30 because they can't guard him.
Yeah.
There's still a path with them being shorthanded. Sixers just make a few shots, and now that lineup struggles. Because when they go to the bench now, they're going for a bunch of athletic guys who don't make shots consistently.
All right. Hopefully this carries over to the fan base. If you were ambivalent and we helped you think about it a little harder, that's fine. If you still don't believe, that's fine too. Just give us what you feel. And we're also going to talk NBA, NFL draft today. We're going to have Jason Stark to talk some Phillies baseball. The Phillies are on a little bit of an offensive run here. And of course, we told you yesterday that Allen Iverson will be on the show. Now, he's supposed to be on at 3:30, but as we all know, we on AI time. So here was the plan. All right, we were supposed to tape an interview with Allen prior to the show. That was the time frame that we had, but we have since been notified that AI it is very possible that he'll come on live instead. We just have to button down a time and hopefully. On AI time, we make it happen. We are shooting for 3:30. It could be 2:45. The message is you have to stay tuned because you never know what's going to happen. I put it on social media. It was 3:30. It was supposed to be 3:30. It still might be 3:30. But again, he may call like right now because we don't know. He's AI. So stay plugged in. Don't go anywhere. Don't venture, because we're going to really work hard to make this happen.
Yes, and I mean, I would love this to happen. I'm excited, but also scared.
It's just like the game tomorrow night. Excited, but a little scared.
Now, put yourself in our thing. We had a sure thing, which I took. Like, I wanted to do it live all along, but we were saying, you know what, you can give you 115 was the time. Can you pre-tape it? I go, if that's what it takes, yes.
We had it all set up.
We had it all set up, right?
We're all ready.
It didn't happen. But I've been in touch with the people, and they're giving me updates that maybe it's better he comes on live. I got one of those. I go, okay, well, let's see what kind. Does 3:30 work for you? I go, 3:30 is perfect for us.
Perfect.
Yes, it was perfect. So I go, okay, we're good. Then I just got a text. It may be 2:45. So like I say, it's AI time. It's a different clock. But we're hanging in there to make it happen for you. It's General Knowledge Wednesday to boot. And today we are giving away a float session. That's right. Two lucky listeners. We've been talking about the Halcyon floats. Two lucky listeners who get a question correct will win a certificate for a free float from Halcyon Floats. This is perfect for Mother's Day that you score one of these certificates. Give her the gift of floating. That's the Fanatics deal of the week, by the way. This week only, you can get one 90-minute float at Halcyon Floats for just $35, normally an $80 value. Relax, recover, reset. Get this deal while supplies last at 975thefanatic.com. But if you answer a general knowledge question correctly today, you will be qualified for the end of the show, and two lucky listeners will get it. Boom.
It's awesome. Right. It's a good prize.
Yes, it is, especially for Mom's Day. Here are our categories. General knowledge, NBA 50-point games, Shakespeare or the Bible. Now, don't get intimidated by that, because it's a 50-50 chance you get it right. I'm going to give you a quote. It's either Shakespeare, it's either Billy, or it's Jesus. All right.
A lot of pressure on Booney today to get these all correct.
Yes.
He's our Bible expert.
Well, he can't miss then.
Nah.
He's a Bible expert.
Well, he's our Bible. He knows the most amongst us.
Yeah, well, he can't get one wrong. If he gets one wrong, we need to broadcast it.
Yep.
All right. And also top scoring NBA foreign players.
Oh, I like this category.
Is the category. So two NBA categories today, Billy Shakespeare in the Bible and general knowledge. Tyrone, you want to set an over-under number?
Yes. I'm going to say two guests. We're going to get AI. I'm going to set it at 7.75.
Ooh, you lowered it today.
Yes.
You went low.
7.75 is the over-under. We got to get to 8.
I think that's a good bet to get to 8. I would play the over right now.
Me too.
All right, here's how you get in. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. Tell me how you feel, good or bad. We feel good about it. Mike Mussinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
The Mike Mussinelli Show. The Fanatic.
You know, right now, with the Sixers in a state of flux, we need this man's wisdom, his confidence, his competitive fire. Here he is, one of the greatest players in NBA history, the legendary number 3, Allen Iverson, joins us. Hello, Allen.
What's happening? What's going on?
How you doing? How you feeling?
Great, man. Same fight, different round.
Yeah. Okay. So before we get to the Sixers, because I got to get your opinion on what's going on here. How you liking this new commercial acting role? Tell the people what you're up to right now.
What are you talking about? The car show commercial?
The commercial, the TV commercials. Who are you representing, and how's that going?
Which one? Which one? The point?
Yes, that one.
I'm just an ambassador. Man, I'm trying, man. I'm trying to, I'm indulged with a whole lot of other stuff, man. I'm retired now, so I can basically get into all of the stuff that I always dreamed about, you know what I mean, and try to, finish a lot of things that I want to do on my bucket list.
Once your money, get your money. First one I saw, right? So
absolutely.
How many takes was that?
not too many for that. That was one of the short ones. But the other ones, you know, I might have to start using teleprompters and all that instead of trying to remember all of this stuff. I thought I wanted to do movies, but then, you know what I mean, all of those parts, and you got to remember all of that stuff. I don't know about it now, man.
Well, listen, you had the good thing with the hands out thing, right? Yeah, that Ty Lue, that commercial. That was cool.
Yeah. I mean,
TikTok. I mean, yeah. TikTok ad.
As long as you got somebody good directing it, man, you'll be all right, man. I think, you know, the directors a lot of times, you know, make the talent make them comfortable. And that's the most important part, man, because you're nervous doing something like that anyway. That, you know, you're kind of like a fish out of water. But then, you know, the directors know how to, you know, really make you comfortable in the situation and get through it.
That's probably a longer day than anything you ever spent in basketball, right? Doing those things?
Yeah, man, the basketball part a lot easier. more painful, but a lot easier.
All right, let me talk about the sit. We need you right now. We need you to put a message out here. When you're looking at your old squad, your little dudes, how you feeling about them right now?
I'm just, you know, I'm not disappointed in any type of way because, you know, they're playing against another professional team, professional coaches. And it's hard to win in this league. Just kind of frustrated, you know what I mean? That we're not adjusting to what they're doing to us. Obviously, you know, in the playoff series, you got that scouting report and, you know, the things that we got away with in the first three games, you know, they did their homework and they're taking away those things. And I think it's just important for us to, you know, understand that they're, you know, trying to make it uncomfortable for us and taking away the things that we were able to, you know, do successfully in the first games. And it's time for us to figure out a way to counter those things that they're doing to us now. You know what I mean? It's just about adjusting. And I think, you know, Nick Nurse put them in a great situation to win two games in a row. And now their confidence is sky high. They're playing at home. They have, you know, real great fans. You know, it's going to be a dogfight. But we got to get out of there with a W because if we go home for a game seven, man, anything can happen.
Yeah. What do you think the Sixers have to do to combat what Toronto is doing?
Adjust. I mean, you know, obviously we didn't play well in the last game. You know what I mean? And I think we have to have big games from our superstars. But I think it's important for the rest of the guys to understand, you know, that they're going to have the help in every way. And, you know, my thing, the way I played, I really didn't concentrate too much or dwell on the X and O's that much. You know, my whole thing was effort, man. If, you know, you just play harder than everybody else out on the basketball court. That was my whole thing when I approached the game. I might not have had a great shooting night, or, you know, didn't play well, great on defense. But I knew I was going to play harder than everybody.
Well, you know I mean? Guess that, then. Listen, we all know that. So, like, when you look at that game, home crowd, a chance to close it out, and you're looking at that kind of effort, like, it wasn't there. And I guess you saw that too, right?
Absolutely. But you know what? That's kind of like the hardest game really to play. You know what I mean? Even if you do play well, is a closeout game. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you got guys that with pride, you know, they're professionals, you know, professional coaching staff. And, you know, just like that, in one game, your whole season, your whole dream can be over as far as winning the championship. You start off the season in training camp and you have a goal of hoisting up that trophy, you know what I mean, at the end of the year. So, you know, you got guys that's getting ready to be eliminated, and they come in with everything, you know, and they can be playing so hard, you know, that it makes us look like we're not playing hard, you know what I mean, because they don't want to go home. They're not ready to go on vacation, you know what I mean? They're not ready for their dream to be over. So it's hard as hell to close out a game with a team, man, because they come in with everything they got because they know it's no tomorrow.
Let's talk about James Harden a bit. When you look at his game right now, what do you see?
I can't say that I don't think, James is comfortable, because I know he's comfortable. He's been in basically every type of game there is, you know what I mean, in his life, you know what I mean. I don't see James being as aggressive as he should be. I want to see him more aggressive, but James, you know, try to play the game the right way, obviously, you know what I mean, we're getting everybody involved and everything. But I think, you know, we need one of those James Harden games, you know, that you know, he's won multiple scoring titles with, you know what I mean? We need him to be extremely aggressive and not worry so much about getting everybody involved, but still trying to play the right way.
He needs to get more than 11 shots up, in other words.
Absolutely. 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 I don't compare no one to me, but, you know, anybody who know how I played the game, you know, if it was a game that, you know, we were getting ready to get closed out, or, you know, have to close somebody out, I'm not leaving no bullets in the chamber. You know what I mean? Because once the war over, you know what I mean, no need to have any bullets left.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just said, like, does he look physically good enough right now? Or do you, like, you played a lot of years, you could tell when guys are favoring stuff. Does he look like his legs are 100% to you?
I mean, you know what? That's what everybody's been saying. You know, I can't go, you know, outside my house without somebody saying something to me about my squad. And particularly what you're talking about is mm-hmm. his health. And I really don't know, you know what I mean? Cause James never had a real super, super fast, you know what I mean? First step or anything like that. He's just, his handle is so great. He's able to get by people, you know, with ease. And, you know, I really can't tell. I just know, you know, he's not being as aggressive as he usually is. And then at some point you got to think, well, in the first couple of games he had success. And they, you know, we were able to win 3 games in a row with him playing like that. So obviously it's going to be up to him to just, you know, take it to another level, you know, and put it in another gear and just be more aggressive. But I don't know. I can't really tell if he's hurt, but that's what, you know, people ask me all the time. You think he's hurt? You know what I mean? You think his hamstring is bothering him? And, you know, I don't think he would even mention that to anybody, you know, especially being in our city and dealing with our fans. You know, this, they don't want to hear that, man. You know, we felt like once we made that trade and got him, then this was our year. And I actually thought that. I was jumping around like a little kid in the candy store once we made that trade, you know what I mean? Because I felt like just adding James, you know, we will hoist that trophy up at the end of the year.
Alan, we're talking to the great Alan Iverson. Let's talk about Maxie a little bit, because, listen, he's got a long way to go. But the first instinct when they see his speed is that he's got AI speed. He's got AI up and down. And I know you see that, but the last couple games they've been able to keep him in check. What's Toronto doing to him? What does he need to do?
It's all it is adjusting. It's a scouting report. You know what I mean? People have to understand this is totally different from you know, your night in game in the regular season. You know what I mean? Where you do you know, maybe a couple film sessions, you know, on a guy. And you go into the next game and y'all play. You might watch film once or twice before you play a team, you know, maybe twice. And now, you know what I mean, all you're doing is studying a whole team for a whole series. So day in and day out, you're watching film and you're putting out a scouting report, you know, on a guy. You know, you got guys taking scouting reports home and studying them and getting, you know, DVD tape, you know, DVDs, and going home and watching guys and analyzing them and, you know, seeing where they're comfortable, where they're not comfortable, you know, what spots they, you know, effective in, on what side of the court, and how aggressive they are from quarter 1, 2, to 3, and then how they are in the last quarter. Do they want to touch the ball at the end of the game? Do they defer to someone else? You know what I mean? All of those elements come in to the equation, you know what I mean? And they, you know, buckle down on people. And it's just about the individual to try to understand what they're doing to them and then counter all of that. You know what I mean? You found out where you were successful at. Then they taken away from you, you know, something from you now. And then now you got to adjust and figure out a way to do something else. So now, you know, if you was effective on one side of the court and they're taking it away, now you got to start working on the other side. I mean, it's just basically playing checkers. I mean, chess instead of playing checkers. That's all it is.
All right, well, hopefully he's got a little burst tomorrow. Last question, I want to talk about the coaching. You know, Doc has taken a lot of heat lately, and especially before the last game, people were saying, well, he didn't have him ready.
Man, Doc is in Philadelphia. When you're in Philadelphia, everybody, the trainer probably got heat right now. They might be saying he's not doing a good job with Embiid's thumb or whatever, you know. They'll blame him for Harden, you know, not being aggressive and thinking something's going on with his hamstring. Man, you're in Philadelphia, you're gonna deal with some heat. You're with the most passionate and the greatest fans in the world.
But my question about that is, how much can a coach motivate an NBA player? Like, for instance, you go back, like, how would Larry get you motivated, or is it just self-motivation when it comes to an NBA player? What can Doc do?
No coach, no teammate, no one. And this that was, I'm just talking about myself, had to motivate me. The motivation is the way you feel about your teammates, the way you feel about your coaches there, the way you feel about them 20,000 people in there that come to support you, the fans all over the world that you have, your family and your friends, and the fact that God gave you this talent. You know what I mean? For you to go out there and play in the NBA. That's the motivation. If you need motivation at this point, then you had no business being out there in the first place. And you're not going to get motivated if you think you need somebody else to motivate you. It got to be self-motivation. You got to want it for yourself before you can want it for anybody else.
What did Larry do for you, guys? How did he approach it?
With myself?
No, just the whole team. Like, in a big game.
We already knew the makeup of our team. Like, we didn't have superstars on our team. You know what I mean? We had guys that believed in each other. You know, we had guys that came out and we believed in each other. We wanted to win and we wanted to play the right way. Everybody knew that I was going to come out there and I was going to shoot all the shots and everybody else was going to play their role to the best of their ability. You know what I mean? We knew what we were going to get from everybody that stepped out on the floor. Everyone knew what they, you know, were going to do. And the year that we went to the finals, we got beat by a better team. We got beat by Shaquille O'Neal and his prime, you know, scoring 30-something points and 15 rebounds a night. The most dominant player to ever play the game. That's who we ran into. You know, we just ran into a better team. You know what I mean? It had nothing to do with
our effort. So basically, what you're saying is it is up to them now.
Yeah, I mean we got the two biggest superstars, you know what I mean, and we got guys that come off the bench. I mean, obviously Reese Maxey has, you know, evolved as a player. He's, you know, stepped his game up. You know what I mean? I think our bench is very talented. You know what I mean? And we have enough. We won three games in a row. You know what I mean? It's all about playing every possession like it's your last, and getting out there and outworking them. We're not worrying about missed shots or who getting plays called for them or anything like that. It's got to be about simply effort. It's got to be us playing harder than them. You know what I mean? And then us as Philly fans and Philly faithfuls, man, we can live that if you get tired, you know what I mean, you just ask to come out. But that's the effort. That's how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be, you know, playing so hard that, you know, at some point, you might have to even ask to come out. You know, that's what this is all about. It's all on the line right now. We don't want to go back home, you know what I mean, to try to get rid of these guys. You know, Miami is resting now.
Yeah. Alan, listen.
And we're going to have a tough matchup the next
match. Well, there's no question about that. Listen, it's always a pleasure to touch base with you and talk to you. People love hearing from you, and good luck with the points bet and the TikTok. And you got anything else on the horizon?
Man, just check me out, man. I'm outside.
All right, man. Listen, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Man, thanks for having me, man.
All right, Alan. Take care. There he is. Alan.
The Mike Missinelli Show. We'll be right back. 97.5 The Fanatic.
3:45, and that means it's time for What's Brewing with Jen. It's brought to you by Dunkin'. It's always game on with Dunkin'. Rewards members pick your day. You can score a free medium hot coffee. One time per week. It's valid at participating locations for a limited time. Exclusions do apply. Our own Jen Scordo has found three fascinating stories for us to bat around. Jen, what do we have today?
Starting with baseball cards today.
Baseball cards?
Yes. All right. In particular, a Honus Wagner card that was damaged, pretty highly damaged. There's a seam right down the middle, and there's a paper cut on the corner. But it just recently went to auction for $1.5 million.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a landscape that's changed, because they usually have to be in pristine condition.
Right. They have to be, like, perfect. And this one was not. It was a 1909 T206 Honus Wagner. And evidently, it is extremely rare, but it did have the sides trimmed off with a paper cutter and a big crease right down the middle. But $1.5 million it went for yesterday.
Time and the card market picking up is a role in it. At some point, yes, they want condition, but if it gets to the point where there's not enough of them in circulation, having one even damaged is better than not having it at all.
Right. And a great investment from what I hear. I mean, if you have, $1.5 million sitting around to spend on a baseball card, and hang on to it for 10, 15 years. And
it's better when the player has passed away.
Yeah.
Because you got these guys pulling a Brady. And then it's not a good investment at all.
Right, that's true.
The guy ended up getting his money back who bought that last touchdown
that was
pass.
Generous.
Yeah, that guy ended up getting the money back.
He could have been out all that.
I'm not doing it.
I think I got some valuable cards, but I'm gonna let my daughter, when I pass, I'm gonna just
give them to your daughter.
Yeah.
Aww.
And put it in my will.
That's sweet.
So she can do whatever she wants with them.
And you don't care what she might do with them?
No, she can make a couple dollars.
Right.
Come on, there's some good cards too.
Yeah.
The 1960 specials.
I remember that day you brought a bunch in. Yeah. And I think it was last August that a very highly graded copy of this card went for $6.6 million. I think we were having that conversation, and that's why you brought the cards in.
Yes.
Back in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I got Willie. I got the Mick. I got Stan the Man.
That's neat. Yeah. You just got to get somebody you trust.
Yep.
Get into those really good auctions.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I mentioned this earlier. There's a potentially hazardous asteroid twice the size of the Empire State Building that's going to skim past Earth tomorrow. And they say skim past Earth.
Yeah, that's scientists playing loose to try to scare people.
Right. Well, they do explain themselves. At the closest point, the asteroid that's going to be traveling more than 30 times the speed of sound will come within about 2 million miles of Earth, which is roughly 8 times the average distance between Earth and the moon. So while it seems like a huge gap to us lay terms in our, it's actually, to the scientists and the NASA people, the smart people. Well, they consider it close.
Will we ever, we can't see
it. No, you won't even see it. No.
No.
Can you see it with the Hubble telescope?
Yeah,
definitely.
They'll
be able to see it. Yeah. They'll be able to see it.
Maybe even with a pretty decent telescope you might have at home, I would think. If you have a nice one.
Yeah, you'd be able to see it. But that's why close is always relative.
Right, so they say
if it was close, they'd be telling people to get home or you have to try to escape. Close is always relative.
So NASA flags any space object that comes with 120 million miles of Earth as a near-Earth object, and any fast-moving object within 4.65 million miles as potentially hazardous. And this one has been flagged as potentially hazardous. But the size of it comes into play, too. It's twice the size of the Empire State Building.
So it would be hazardous because it would fragment? And, why would it be hazardous?
Because it's coming so close.
Yeah.
But isn't that close.
But close is not that close.
That's what I'm saying. Could it fragment off?
I'm sure it could,
but then it would still have to go
and it would
millions of miles.
And then they burn up in our atmosphere.
Yeah, so how big of a piece is going to enter it and all that stuff?
Right, if it broke in half and started coming this way.
Listen to you science heads, asteroid heads.
I love it.
Here's the thing. You know how in the movies, whatever movie you want to talk in space, where it's like an asteroid belt there, having to do all this dodging and stuff?
Yeah.
They say space is so large that it would be something like you'd see one over there. And you see one way over there, you drive straight through. Millions of miles away, it looks like a belt. But it's like the gap. It'd be like if somebody had a bicycle and they were trying to ride between me and Mike.
Right.
We're close, but you could fit a million bikes in between the two of us. You wouldn't have to do all that swerving. You just look, pick a lane, and you just drive straight. And they're not that close together because space is so big.
So the film industry takes some
a lot of liberties to make it look like, oh, no, you're going to get hit. No, you're not. You would literally like be like double dutch. You'd wait. You'd see and go, oh, look, we can fit all of us through 90 of these spots.
Right.
Like, it's just.
So we don't have to worry.
You don't have to worry. Yes, right, there's no worry.
So why would they even like make it a story?
Because it was flagged as potentially hazardous because it's coming that close.
It's not going to affect us.
But you still have to watch it, though.
It's not going to affect us whatsoever. Why is it a story?
You have to watch it.
You do. I mean,
it's just a space head wanting to get their info out.
Well, it's not like somebody's driving the thing.
It has no value to me at all, that story.
Oh, see.
Really?
You do not respect space.
It's got nothing. The story's got nothing.
You do not respect space.
It has nothing to do with my life.
You don't respect space.
You shouldn't be allowed to go outside at night.
That's right. You can't look at the stars.
Down, you go in the house.
You should not be allowed to look up at the stars and gaze and look at its wonder.
Watch out!
See, you're
a zillion miles away. Don't go out of your house.
You're an anti-star night.
Yes.
You're an anti-star night, and you should not be allowed to do anything star-related.
Nope.
Look out below! God, I'm sorry.
Listen to him. All right. So on Monday, I told you a story about the man who smuggled $50,000 worth of gold bars in his bum cheeks. Well, two men were caught trying to smuggle gold and cash through an airport under their wigs. So a TSA agent, I believe this was in India, looked and saw that their hair was a little... messed up. Like, it just looked odd. It looked suspicious to the TSA attendant. And so they pulled him aside. They pulled the wigs off, and there's gold sitting underneath it.
What is happening with these people now?
Let me ask you this. Could you be able to walk through the detector?
I would think it would go off, right?
It would go off.
Well, that's what
gold
it
is.
Like, what are they thinking?
I don't know. But they also
criminals.
They also found gold stashed in their socks as well.
In your socks?
And in their bum.
So hold on.
This time, not even in the cheeks.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I thought you were saying yesterday.
I don't understand
most
this.
Of it was
this is what I don't understand. They weren't flying internationally, right?
I believe it was in India.
Right. So what I'm saying is that while treacherous, you can drive.
Yes.
Why do you need... what I'm saying is, if I got a bunch of gold, I'm not going to fly with
it. That's a good point.
I'm going to use a little bit of the gold and go to like a pawn shop and get some cash.
Yeah. Go get
and
yourself a car.
I'm going to rent a car because I'm going to drive it in my car. It's a lot of gold. Something. And then I'm just going to drive.
Yeah.
And then find the gold. Like, I'm just going to drive.
Yeah.
Why are you flying?
I don't know.
Gold.
Listen, it's like a Republican congressman showing up and he's got a gun in his bag thinking he can get it through.
Right.
Did that happen? Or did I make that up? All right. I'm sorry. I digress. I hear you. This is a gold story.
Not a gun story.
Okay, all right.
Also, in general, not talking about any specific person, I don't know if it's kosher for you to fly with a gun. Perhaps check your bag before you get there.
Anyone.
Like, Jen, the next time you fly... just as your friend,
yes.
I think it would be wise for you to not pack the gun in the bag.
Correct.
Because they'll flag it.
Oh. Yeah,
it's not legal.
Yeah, you're not going to get that death row.
But
you're also not going to get gold.
Right.
Gold.
Let me ask you a question. I don't want to be like, if you put gold in a cigar tube.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going with this?
Oh, Mike.
Would it be detectable?
I mean,
it depends on where it is, man. Yeah.
Well, you know where I'm suggesting it.
Yes, they would ask questions. They would ask questions.
They would show up?
Yes, because the tube would only show, then they would show what's in the tube. You could get through probably with the empty tube, but once you put something in the tube.
No. You're hiding the tube in your side.
Right, and when they x-ray.
Yeah, you start to walk through the machine.
You start to walk through, and then they're going to see.
Okay, I just want to know. I didn't know.
You're talking about getting
a cigar.
How bad do you want that Cuban cigar? You want Cuba cigar that bad? Then you know what? Swim back from Cuba.
Right.
Like, do not fly. Like, get it on the boat.
Listen, let me tell you something.
What are you doing?
I've smoked in many Cuban cigars in my sneakers in my bag.
Yeah, right. they don't care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If it's not metal, they're not even checking that hard.
Right. Yeah, they don't care.
But if you're going to stuff gold in there and do that, they're going to still see it.
Okay, I just want to know if they can still see it.
Yes.
They can see everything.
All right, I'm not doing it. And I'm not doing it.
Don't.
I don't care what you guys say.
Please don't.
I'm not going to do it, no matter how much you urge me.
Please don't.
All right, that's what's brewing with Jen. And that's brought to you by Dunkin'. It's always game on. Dunkin' rewards members, pick your day, score free medium hot coffee one time per week. Valid at participating locations for a limited time. Exclusions apply. It's General Knowledge Wednesday, folks.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
The Phillies quietly have won two in a row, bashing around those Colorado Rockies. So let's get the lowdown from the man who is synonymous with baseball journalism in America. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame. He writes for The Athletic. He does so many other things that entertain us. And his name is Jason Stark. He's brought to us by Everfresh Juices, Juice Drinks, Everfresh, Nature's Refreshment. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Mike. How we doing?
Good. Jason, are you feeling a Game 6 W for the Sixers, first of all?
I'm not, Mike.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
If you are, I'm glad. I'm happy for you. I'm not.
All right.
I'm not that good.
I am. I'm feeling an effort. Like last year, when their back was against the wall, they won in Atlanta. Now, Game 7 didn't turn out well, but, you know.
They got to impose their will on that team, and we haven't seen that. But, if you want to go down this road, I'm worried, but I'm not just worried about the Sixers. I'm worried about the people in our town who could be scarred for life if this collapse happens.
Well, it would be historic, and so we would be scarred for life.
Yeah, you know, Mike, you remember well, I wrote a book about the 2008 Phillies.
Yes.
And after the book came out, I went around, I did all these book signings, talked to all these happy Philadelphians. Mm-hmm. What did it mean to them to see some team that they root for actually win something? And I can't tell you how many people who are old enough would still talk to me about the collapse of
64.
The 64 Phillies.
Yes,
who were up 6.5 with 12 to play.
Yeah.
And I would tell them, get over it. Your team won. You can move on now. But, Mike, this is your department, not my department. What are you going to tell these people if this happens?
No, you're absolutely right. And like I say, that's why if it gets to Game 7, I'm not feeling really too. But I somehow feel there's an effort in Game 6. But we'll see what happens. Let's talk about your baseball squad. You know, they looked down and out for a little bit. And, you know, last couple games, they started to get some runs. They got help when a ball dropped in the outfield. But, you know, it triggered something here.
Yeah, they scored 18 runs in two games against the Rockies. Do you know that they never scored 8 runs or more in 2 straight home games at any point last year? Right?
So
they did that. They need to score. They're built to score. The Rockies were very helpful in helping them score. But I thought that was still the best this lineup has looked since probably the first two games of the season. Really good approaches up and down the lineup, and it's a season where the ball just hasn't carried at all anywhere. And if that's the case, you need to change approach, and I think that's what we saw the last couple of days.
Well, good. That's good, and that's why that hitting coach is key for them. All right, so let's talk about your conversation with the general manager and what's going through the mind of Dave Dombrowski right now. Is he satisfied?
He definitely is not satisfied with the way this team has swung the bats. He made that pretty clear. Also, we talked about, the morning after Angel Hernandez had done his thing, and he was surprisingly upbeat about his belief that the electronic strike zone or robot umps or whatever we're going to call it was a way for baseball to fix this. Whatever you thought of Angel on Sunday night, there's no way that robot umps and the automated strike zone can't be better than that.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, he has really been a guy not judged very well for a really long time.
Angel.
Yeah, Angel. And so, like, I'm wondering, like, what goes on within baseball when it comes to something like this, where a guy just doesn't grade out very well, where the players really don't respect him at all? What happens?
Nothing happens. Obviously, over the last 5 years, he grades out as the 15th worst ball strike umpire in baseball. And nothing happens because the basic agreement with the umpires protects him. And yet everybody knows this is who he is. I wasn't there Sunday. I was out there earlier in the weekend. And I can tell you, it was a topic, the fact that he was going to work the plate in a Sunday night ESPN game. Everybody knew that something was coming. And I'm not just talking about sports writers sitting around trying to waste time. I'm talking about people with both teams knew that something was coming. That tells you about Angel. And, like, I don't know if you follow that, like, that umpire scorecard site or umpire auditor on Twitter. Umpire scorecards had him missing almost one out of every four pitches that he called a strike. 23% of all the pitches he called strikes were balls. That's impossible.
Yeah, it's not new news, though. So I guess the question, like, how does it protect him if his performance is clearly inadequate? Why would he get protection from that? Like any other employee, if your performance is inadequate.
I mean, they haven't forced any umpires out based on performance in a really long time, over a decade, since Sandy Alderson took charge of the umpires, whenever that was, probably 15 years ago, and forced a few of them to retire, basically broke their union. But now they have a new union. Mm-hmm. They have an agreement. It's really hard to prove cause or ineptitude. You could prove it, I would think.
Well, that stat you just gave me kind of proves a little of it, doesn't it?
I don't know. Suppose we were as inaccurate as that guy was.
That's what I'm saying. It's like this is substance. Like, okay, here, I can point to this stat. But all right, I get it. I know those unions have a lot of power. Let's talk about some moves that the Phillies made. The Roman Quinn move is interesting to me. Like, you know, the Phillies, when they see clear that they can remove a player from the organization, probably for the benefit of both parties, they seem to be bring him back all the time. What's the Roman Quinn thing about?
You looked up last night, and Roman Quinn and Odubel Herrera were in the outfield. Wasn't it like you're stuck in some kind of weird?
It really is, and so it's unbelievable. They can easily just move on, and they don't.
Yeah, well, you know, the Roman Quinn thing is a little different than his role here in the past. He is not here to play regularly. This relates directly to the Bryce Harper injury, which we should talk about.
Yeah.
Because of that, they were really short on guys in their system and guys in Philadelphia who can play the outfield. And so Roman Quinn's still one of the fastest humans in the sport. You have a DH rule now, so you don't have to pinch hit him. He's basically around a pinch run, and he's around to play defense in the late innings for all those outfielders you don't want playing defense.
All right. I guess I get it. It's a bad look to me. It's like it doesn't help you.
If he starts five games in a row, get back to me. But that really is not the plan. This, you know, the Bryce thing is, a bigger concern than anybody's letting on. And like, isn't it the most Philadelphia thing ever to live in a world where everybody's healthy except the two biggest stars in town?
Yeah, so let's talk about it a little bit, because the owner, Collateral Lehman, he can't throw. It's clear. Like that, you know, when he tried to, it's not, just not going. And that ligament is no joke. That's a ligament that puts pitchers out for a season. So
right,
well, what are they going to do here?
Okay, let me explain what this is. Let's just take Bryce at his word. They're saying it's just a quote-unquote mild flexor strain. So just so you know, that flexor is muscle, tendon. I'm probably messing this up a little bit. But it's right next to that Tommy John ligament, the UCL.
Yes,
the okay? UCL. So the strain is where that tendon meets the bone in the elbow. So I have medical people I talk to who tell me if it's just that injury, it's a 4 to 6 week recovery if everything goes well. So he's a week and a half into not playing the field, which means we could be looking at another month of this. And that's a problem because this team is not constructed for Bryce Harper to be the DH. But if he can swing the bat, he's going to DH. And so
it puts Schwarber and Castellanos in play every night.
Well, Shuler was going to play every night anyway, yeah. But Castellanos in right is not the thing that you're looking to do long term. JT having to catch 100 games in a row, not looking to do that. This has ripple effects. And then, I have two questions. All right, one is, even when he comes back, say they give him a month, can his elbow handle the throws that a right fielder has to make? Those are max effort throws, and they happen in the moment. It's not like he can warm up like a pitcher. So that's a big concern for me. The other is, what happens if it's more than a flexor strain? And they've tried to insist this is not a UCL. I know for a fact of teams that have said UCL strains are really flexor strains. It's very close to that area. But even if we don't need to go there yet, I'd say watch this injury because I don't see how it cannot be a topic for a long time.
That's not good. All right, listen, before I let you go, I haven't done this with you in a while, but you're on every Wednesday, so it's General Knowledge Wednesday. So, I
have no general knowledge.
No, you do, because you're also a basketball guy. So the category is NBA 50 point games since 2010. I'm going to give you a hint. In 2018, this guy scored 60 for the Charlotte Hornets, and he happens to be a product of the Big East, which I know you're a big fan of. Charlotte Hornets, 60 points, Big East.
And think college, Jason. You 100% know this player.
You do.
Because he's done some things to your squad.
Yes.
Yeah, UConn, right?
Yes.
God. All right. I know who it is, but...
He knows that.
My basketball brain doesn't work that well in the middle of baseball season.
No, I got you. I got you. I'll let you off the hook.
Yeah.
But very disappointing. My dad. It's Kemba Walker, Jason.
Kemba, right?
He definitely knew it.
Yeah, you caught. I know, but still, we can't give you credit for what may have been in your head.
No, I have no general knowledge. I tried to tell you.
All right. Jason, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you.
Have a good hoop game, Mike.
Yeah, Sixers are going to win. It's going to surprise you.
Sounds good.
All right, see, there he is. Jason Stark, and he, of course, is brought to us by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks. Everfresh is nature's refreshment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.